The Quocast, a status quo fan podcast.
This is Jamie Dyer welcoming you to another edition of The Quocast. And I'm joined via the medium of the telephone by, as most news outlets over the years have called him, a super fan, Alan Crook. Would you describe yourself as a super fan?
It's not a word I would use myself, to be honest. I'd just call myself a run-of-the-mill fan.
Yeah. How did you get into Status Quo?
Oh, now that's ancient history. I first saw Quo in December 1977 at Lewisham Odeon. A few friends and I got some tickets for that. And I remember we'd never been to a proper rock gig before. So we actually booked ourselves some tickets to see Dr. Feelgood in Ipswich a couple of weeks beforehand so that we could find out what a real gig atmosphere was like. So we went to see Dr. Feelgood, thoroughly enjoyed them. And off we went to Lewisham a couple of weeks later and saw Quo, and they absolutely ripped the place up. It was absolutely amazing. I'll never forget it. The fans were jumping up and down, rocking backwards and forwards on the seats. They were like cinema seats, and there were rows of seats with Quo fans rocking backwards and forwards, and they were collapsing like dominoes back all over the theatre. They were just falling apart, people falling backwards and forwards and all over the place. Well, that was my first ever gig with three other mates. And then the following year was Reading Festival. I was abroad for that, so I couldn't go to that. Definitely wanted to see Quo again. So in 1979, I decided with one friend we were going to bunk off school, and we bought tickets for about half a dozen gigs all over the country. And we slid away from school without telling anybody and went to see Quo in Birmingham, in Hammersmith, and a few other places. And we'd get there, because we weren't going to school, we'd get there really early because we wanted to meet the band. And at Hammersmith, it was Hammersmith Apollo, Odeon as it was then, it was the first time we ever got to meet the band. We turned up about 12 o'clock, and I don't know, they turned up about 3 o'clock, and as they individually came in, we'd get a photo with them and say hello to them, and that's how it started. We pretty much did the same thing at all those gigs that we went to that year. We got in trouble for skiving off school, and they knew where we'd been anyway, but hey-ho. And after that, still did the same thing year upon year upon year, just turning up early, meeting the band, occasionally getting invited into sound checks, and just went on from there, to be honest. So they sort of got to know who I was, because friends sort of ducked out of it after a couple of years. But they got to know me, and I used to throw these calling cards up on stage for years on end, hundreds of them. And Francis or somebody, Francis would pick him up, and he'd say, "Oh, that Mr. Crook's here again. Where is he?" And I remember one time I was about halfway back in the crowd, and he threw this card back, and I caught the thing back myself. So I had another spare one.
It's interesting to hear your testimony of relatively early gigs from sort of the mid-70s, because we all have heard the live album and how kind of up for it the crowd are, but what you're saying is it's all 100% true. It's not hearsay.
Oh, absolutely true. Absolutely true. I got into Quo, I think, from the On the Level album, I think that was the first one I ever heard. Absolutely loved it. Storming thing. And obviously went on to get the live album. Loved that. And it's a cliche. It's been said a million times before, but the atmosphere is just amazing. And Francis, you know, as a front man, he comes across so well with the crowd. And, you know, the whole band, going back to the Frantic Four, absolutely amazing performances, so much energy. And the crowd just, you know, everybody gets off on that really big time. And you know, from then on, even with the different lineups, there's so much energy at a Quo gig. And I think the closer to the front that you are, the more you get involved in the gig as well, because you get those little, you know, nods and chats stage, which is always a nice thing to have. But yes, the atmosphere has never changed for me. It's absolutely amazing. I love it.
Well, it's great to hear that your enthusiasm for the band hasn't waned where others might have dropped off because of those different lineups and stuff.
Yeah, I read the comments on Facebook, and you know, I loved the Frantic Four. You know, I got to know Alan and John, obviously, as well as Rick and Francis back in the day. They knew me by name, you know, for many, many years, and I absolutely loved them. And when John went, it was a big, big shame, but I didn't want Quo to finish. You know, that was the last thing I wanted. So when successive drummers came in, obviously Alan went, and then Rhino came in, Jeff, I was so happy that Quo was still going, because I was still hearing those same songs that I'd heard for years and loved for years, plus there were more to come. And that was... I mean, I was on some poor sod's shoulders at Milton Keynes Bowl at the end of the last one at the end of the road. And I remember sitting up there about three or four rows back on this bloke's shoulders as they went off stage. And I thought, what am I going to do now? Who am I going to go and see now? There's nobody else I want to go. I mean, I do go and see other bands, but not with the intensity and fervour that I did with Quo. So I just felt at a total loss. And when I heard that they were coming back, I was over the moon, and have been ever since. And it was a different journey, obviously, with a different lineup. And it was the start of a whole lot more fun for myself and a bunch of friends. So yeah, I love all different lineups. You know, I hate it that Quo fans argue, you know, when on social media about Frantic Four and Nothing Since has been good or vice versa. It's, you know, we're all, as far as I'm concerned, we're all part of the Quo family, and it's a shame that those arguments exist, and I don't ever get involved in them, as far as I can remember anyway, but I just find that a great pity, because we still have Quo, and I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that, more than happy.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the fans. Everybody's got their own opinion, and, you know, they're entitled to it. But, you know, it's a shame, as you say, that people can't get along when they all like the same thing. But you make reference to the set list and kind of hearing the same songs. Now, Quo are kind of infamous for doing that. Have you ever had a problem with the set list?
No, because I understand it. They've got such a huge back catalogue. And obviously with you know, from 84, when they were X number of years old, until now, the set length time has shortened with age. You know, that's going to happen. But you can't please all the people all the time. And they've got such an extensive back catalogue that they can't include all those songs. They have to include a real good spread, if you like, of the hits from over the years, because that's what the non-Quo fans, you know, who probably make up over 50% of the audience now, you know, one-off punters who come and see Quo, they want to hear the songs that they've heard on the radio and in the charts. So those songs need to be included. You know, I would say there are a good 10 or more that just have to be in there. And if the band are promoting a new album, then they'll slip a couple of songs in from the new album to promote that. Obviously, they're touring to gain sales for that album. And the odd album track. I mean, I've played in a Quo tribute band called Quo No for 30 years now. And what we used to do was every other song was a hit, and every other song was an album track, so that people would get what they want if they were non-Quo fans as such. And the ones who would get album tracks that they didn't hear perhaps other tribute bands or Quo play live on stage. So, yeah, I totally understand why the set can sound the same. And obviously they're only playing like an hour and a half now instead of 3 hours 30 years ago. And there's a limited number of songs you can get into that time. So the bulk, I would say, need to be songs, and then slip in some album tracks or new tracks alongside them. Make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense, doesn't it? And it's why they started to introduce more medleys as time went on.
A great idea. Not everybody's favourite, especially if part of that medley is a song that you really, really like and it's cut short. I mean, for me, 4,500 times, that's my favourite track of all time by any band. And I would love to hear another 20-odd minute version of it played live. But it's great to hear sort of 3 or 4 minutes of it as part of a medley. And it's a great way of getting more hits in to a shorter space of time. And that then leaves space for new tracks or album tracks. But again, it keeps a lot of people happy. So, fair point.
Yeah, I think so. Now, obviously, some people would know you from going to the gigs for all that time. Others would know you from the sleeve of Quid Pro Quo, because you wrote a song for that album. How did that come about?
High point of my writing career. I've always written. I started off when I was younger writing poems, all sorts of different styles of poems. I've always been into writing. I remember when I was at school, I wanted to be a journalist. It didn't happen, but that was because I enjoyed writing and I enjoy the English language. But how that really started, how it got to that point with Any Way You Like It, was when Rhino joined the band. I was standing outside Blackpool Opera House or Winter Gardens in the queue one day, and we'd done a fair few gigs. I was with a mate called Steve Beals, also a huge Quo fan. We were hanging about in the queue, having done a few gigs and been up the front at them. And somebody came from the backstage door and pointed at Steve and myself and said, "Oi, you two, come with me." I was like, "What have we done wrong now?" And we followed this fellow to the bowels of the theatre, and there was Rhino. And we thought, "Oh, what sort of trouble are we?" And he introduced himself as if we didn't actually know his name, and asked our names, and we told him, and he said, "Look, how am I doing?" And we both looked at each other and thought, he's asking us how he's doing. He's actually in Quo. But he did, you know, and he recognized that we were staunch fans, and it was a real compliment that he was asking us how we thought he was doing. And then we developed a sort of more than nodding acquaintance, and I think Rhino it asked either of us, both of us, for our numbers, or gave his number to us. And I remember for a few years after that, whenever Quo released an album, Rhino would give me a call to get a rundown on what I thought of the albums. And we'd go through them track by track, and like out of 10 for the album as a whole. I'd make a point of never of listening to the album without ever looking who'd written particular tracks, so that I'd an honest opinion on every single track, even if he'd written it. And I really respected him for asking my opinion on that. And at some point, I started sending him lyrics that I'd written for songs, because I'd gone more from poetry to writing lyrics quite a few years before. So I started sending him lyrics. And a couple of years later, I bumped into Andrew at some gig. I think with him, some paint, if I remember rightly, up in Lincoln before a gig. And we sat down and had a beer in this little pub, and we started chatting. And I told him I was sending lyrics to Rhino, and he said, "Well, if you want to send some to me, please feel free." So he gave me his number, and I started sending lyrics to both of them. And one day, out of the blue, a few years later, Andrew phoned me, and he said, "You know this song, Any Way You Like It, that you sent me?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, it's on the album." And as I am now, still a bit speechless, because to get a song on a Quo album has been a lifelong dream for me. And it actually came true. And for it to be a top 10 album as well, to have my name on it alongside all of theirs, it's just unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm still pretty blown away by it.
Must have been quite an experience. And I know that Richie talked about it recently when he wrote Face the Music, I think it was, where he said it was kind of bizarre hearing his words come out of Rossi's mouth, because you've been listening to that voice for years.
I still think the same every time I hear it. You know, and in my local pub in the Ram in Brandon, love that place. If I walk through the door within a few minutes, quite often somebody will have stuck it on the jukebox. And every time I hear it, I mean, I don't tend to play it at home for obvious reasons, but when I hear it on the pub jukebox, it still makes me think that's Francis Rossi singing my lyrics, and it's Rick Parfitt in the background, and probably Rhino and Andrew doing backing vocals to the lyrics that I wrote in my living room, little old me. It's Status Quo singing my lyrics. Wow, you know, world famous rock stars singing words that Alan Crook wrote. You know, it still gets me now, and I'm glad it does, because otherwise, I'd like to have another one. You know, who wants to be a one hit wonder? So I'm still busy writing and sending. So never say never. That'd make a good title, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can hear that it still chokes you up a bit, you know, that these people that you've admired for so long took on your lyrics. Now, obviously, you mentioned Rick there in passing. Had you had much to do with Rick?
Yes. Well, yes. We had spent many an evening drinking together. I'd say many of them. Here and there, all over the country, and I remember specifically one night in I went to see Quo in Germany, and I didn't actually get in the gig, so I stood outside the backstage door, is a festival, and Quo played in the afternoon, and I stood outside the gate to this festival because I could see that they'd gone straight onto the bus, and the bus came out. Just with the band on it, and I stuck my thumb out, and the Rhino saw me and said, "That's Crook." And the bus stopped, and I hopped on, and I went 2 hours or whatever, 2 to 3 hours with them on the bus to Hamburg. And I had a hotel room back in the place where they were staying, and my mum was there with me, and she was fast asleep, I should think, by then. And we got to their hotel, and Rhino said, "Just drop my bag in and I'll be back in a minute." "All right," he said, "we're going to have a drink." And he came out with Rick. And the three of us ended up in a pub somewhere in Hamburg until, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning, drinking merrily away. And at some point, Rick said to me, he said, "Does your mum know you're here?" She's like, boy, laugh. I said, "Oh, no, she hasn't actually. She doesn't know." And he said, "Don't you think you want to give her a ring?" And fortunately, I'd nicked the matches out of the hotel room, and it had the phone number of the hotel on. So I phoned my mum, woke her up, and said, "I'm in Hamburg with Rick and Rhino in a bar," and passed the phone over, and they both, "All right, mum, yeah, he's all right, he's all right." she arranged to come and pick me up at 10 o'clock. Ended up sleeping in the station, I think, on the floor in the station somewhere until then, but... But yeah, you know, I had a drink with Rick backstage a few times, and in a few bars all over the place. Yeah, miss that man so much, really do.
I think that's a sentiment matched by many people. And well, I mean, at the moment, obviously Quo were due to go out on tour and they didn't. And, you know, all the other COVID stuff, we don't need to go into all of that detail. But you've been going to gigs for years. How do you feel right now not being able to do that?
Pretty damn lost, to be honest. Not wishing to brag, but I've racked up about 500 gigs now, and I'm far from the only one. My mate Steve, as I mentioned earlier. And other members of the so-named Rabble Bunch that Francis named us many years ago, the Rabble Bunch of SMEs down the front. We've all racked up, you know, hundreds of gigs each. And it's our holiday, pretty much, every year. You know, I wouldn't go and sit on a beach for 2-3 weeks. I'd save up and I'd buy Quo tickets and spend it on hotels. So I miss gigging with Quo so much. I'd miss gigging with my own band. I've got a glam band called Glam Dads, and I can't even get together to rehearse with them. God knows we need it. But yeah, gigging live myself and going and seeing Quo. It I miss it so much that I just, yeah, I'm wondering what I'm doing with myself. That sounds wrong. With my time. Yeah.
I can understand that.
It's frustrating.
It is.
It's frustrating for everybody, you know. It really is. It's frustrating for everybody. And I really feel for the professional musicians who can't earn a living, and all the crews who can't, you know, the regular stage crew and all that, who can't earn a living. From what I can gather, don't want to be too political, but sod it. They're not being looked after by the government. And, you know, I'd hate to see those people who, you know, they get adored, if you like, as much as the band at some, you know, to some point, you know, because they become kind of stars in their own right. And to think that they might be struggling a bit, I mean, I wouldn't imagine the band are struggling too much, but those members of the crew, it breaks your heart to think that they might be struggling. So, you know, big up to them.
Well, it was recently highlighted, obviously, by that single from Rhino's Revenge.
Absolutely, yeah, and I fully support that, which is why I mentioned it. You know, it comes to mind very often. You know, I'm in touch with a couple of the crew, and we say, you know, we say hello on Facebook or something every now and again. But, yeah, good for Rhino for doing that, you know. Knees up Mother Brown, I say.
I know. I did a review of it on this podcast, and that's it kind of reminded me, sort of half Laughing Policeman, half Knees Up Mother Brown.
Yeah.
That type of thing. I mean, are you getting time in to write any songs at the moment?
I am. Yeah, I'm very busy as we speak. I've just done something today. That I'm quite hopeful for. I've got Steve Beals, the person I keep mentioning. He's sending me lyrics as well. I've got stuff that I've written some time ago that I'm looking at again. I recently found an old dictaphone that I used to carry around with me. And I know that for a fact that there are a good 15, 20 songs or bits of songs or just ideas for titles on there. So I'll be putting new batteries in that and seeing what's on there, and hopefully there's something half decent. So yeah, I've been very busy with a lot of lyrics, and even the odd poem from many years ago that is a sort of verses type poem. I've been looking at those with a view to maybe altering them slightly to find a song lyric out of them. So. Yeah, all sorts of ideas.
It's always good to go back over old material because you might have discarded it at the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there could be a little prize, you know, prize nugget in there, just a line. I'm talking to Steve about the same thing a little while ago. There could be a line or two in there that just jumps out that you've totally forgotten about, and that could be the start of a brand new song, or yeah, it could be the little jewel in the crown, if you like. Yeah, never throw things away. Never.
No, I share that.
Which is why my place is so cluttered. But yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah, I share that sentiment totally. I mean, are you? I've spoken to a lot of people on this podcast who basically collect everything Status Quo. Like they've got rooms in their house that are just covered with it. Are you one of those people?
Yeah. When I was living at home before I got my own place, my bedroom walls were top to toe covered in Quo pictures and newspaper articles. And when I moved into my current place, a lot of that all came with me in a big box. And basically it's still there from my bedroom at home. But in the 437 years that I've lived where I do now, I've amassed a new collection, if you like. And I'm the very proud owner. I don't do every single thing. I mean, I haven't bought a program in years. Shame on me, perhaps. But then again, it makes up for the fact that I used to buy two when I was younger, so I could put both sides up on my bedroom wall. But now I'm the very proud owner of all the white cabinets that used to be the silver cabinets that Quo had done for their 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
They had them recovered in white for the Don't Stop tour, and They had them remade completely some years ago, and I was given the whole lot. So I've got all the cabinets. So I've got loads of storage room. All these empty, they've got no guts in them, but they are the original cabinets. And then some have got Rick and some have got Francis's initials on them as their main cabs. And I've got the amp shelves as well. And I've got Francis's amplifier that he had specially made for the pub tour, the little Vox that he had copied from Brian May's one that he used on the Don't Stop album. Francis liked it so much that he got one made himself. And I've now got that in my living room. So, yeah, I've got a different kind of collection, if you like. I've got the, I don't know if you ever saw them, but hopefully you did, the Death Row and Wall of Death signs that they, the sort of number plates that they used to have on the amps behind them on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got both of those. I've got the pair of those, the original and only ones. So I'm very proud to have those. And I think my number one possession is the denim shirt that Rick wore for years on stage, the one with the patches on the Rock Till You Drop cover. He gave me that back at Bournemouth one year in exchange for a Quo belt buckle that I'd given him. And he was really pleased with that. And I said, well, you can have it as long as you wear it on stage. And he went, yeah, absolutely. And then Francis came by and said, well, that's nice. He said, you've got to give him something in return. So Rick went back into the dressing room and little room at the back, and he came out with his stage shirt. So absolutely pleased as punch with that. And, well, Rick never wore that on stage because apparently it scratched up the back of his guitar. But you know what? He had it, and I've got the stage shirt in return, so I'm more than happy with that. They never worked.
I mean, that is iconic, because there's going to be loads of people who will love that album for various reasons, and they're all holding it in their hand, and the shirt he's wearing on it is in your flat somewhere.
It is, yeah, and yeah, it's just one of those things that I treasure so much, you know. Obviously, he'd worn it for many, many years. It was moth-bitten and patched and all the rest of it. And the funniest thing is, in the collar, it's got Rick written in the collar, like a little schoolboy's shirt. And it's in, like, kids' writing as well. So that really makes me smile. But, yeah, it's one of those things that you know, I'd never part with. It's that he'd had it for so long and worn it for so long. And it was an iconic shirt. And he gave it to me, of all people. So, I'm very proud of that.
Excellent. Well, I mean, that is a great story. Thank you for sharing it. And I will draw it to a close here, but I would like to get into the habit of asking my guest that I have on this podcast that if you could pick kind of one album to introduce the band to somebody, what would you pick?
Oh, put me on the spot there, why don't you? Oh, now, well, the one that I was introduced to Quo with was On the Level. That's not a bad one. I mean, a lot, two or three of those early ones. Hello would be a great one. But you know, I'm not ruling out. Obviously, Quid Pro Quo. I've got to say that, haven't I? and also, you know what? I'm just going to say Quid Pro Quo, because there's a lot of very varied stuff on there. And if you are, you know, being introduced to Quo, you probably want to be introduced to a current version that you can go and see. So Quid Pro Quo, it's got 15 tracks, original tracks on it, plus I think it came with a live 10-track CD. So you get a load of the old stuff as well. So, yeah, I'll go for that one.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Not a problem, Jamie. It's good to talk to you.